I'm Matthew McCabe. Welcome to Miracle Voices. Each episode, we will be delving into stories of forgiveness, healing, and transformation that have come about from integrating the principles of the book, A Course in Miracles. If you want to learn more about A Course in Miracles, visit www.acim.org. If you'd like to visit the Miracle Voices site, please go to www.miraclevoices.org. If you feel inspired to make a love offering, please visit us at miraclevoices.org/donate. All donations go to support the work of the Foundation for Inner Peace, the publisher of A Course in Miracles. Now here's your program. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Miracle Voices. This is your co-host, Matt McCabe. I'm here with my co-host, Tam Morgan. Tam, how you doing in 2024?
Oh, it's a good year.
Good.
Like every day that's good, it's a good year. And even if it's bad, it's a good year.
You feeling zazzy?
We're learning non-attachment.
Yeah. Good.
In this happy dream we're entering. Good dream. Yay, dream.
Good.
How about you?
Feeling good. Feeling good, right? Ready to go. Energized.
Okay.
And our guest today I'm really excited about is Selena Granato. I said it the wrong way. It's Selena Granato. Welcome, Selena.
Thank you so much. Any way you say it is perfect. No problem there.
I'm sorry. I want everyone to know that Matt really practiced this.
Yeah.
And that's the way the year is starting. It's all perfect.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Selena, welcome to Miracle Voices. Where are you sitting in the world right now?
Oh, thanks so much, Matt and Tam. I'm so happy to be here. I am actually in the U.S. in Southern Nevada. I live about an hour and 15 minutes north of Las Vegas. So everyone says, oh, you live in Nevada. It must be Las Vegas. Well, no, not quite. I am in the same county, but north of Las Vegas. So I live very close, actually, to the states of Utah and Arizona, almost right on the state lines.
Okay.
So, yeah, out in the desert.
Yeah, Sin City is close, but you can just go into Las Vegas and be like, hey, I just want to remind you, there is no sin. Even though you're in Sin City, there is no sin.
Absolutely. You know, you can use and do the practice anywhere and everywhere you go. So that's a good remembering.
They should call it Sinless City.
Yeah.
Sinless.
Although
City.
They probably wouldn't get as many tourists. People, they want to do something they're not normally doing.
You got a point. Okay.
Very true.
Yeah.
Okay.
So do you wander off into the desert ever, like for walks or anything like that? Or do you have that kind of nature around you?
Yeah, you know, that is a good question. Being in the desert, yes, we have great hiking trails. There are places to go. It's different. I have not always lived in the desert in the Southwest. So I do wander a little bit. Maybe being here at this time of my life is symbolic in some ways, going deeper, walking in the desert. I don't know. I got to put some thought into that. But I do a lot of hiking. My partner, Joe, and I, we actually travel around quite a bit and check out the state parks. And there are a lot of lovely places nearby that we like to go and check out.
Okay.
And explore. Yeah.
Well, Selena, why don't we start with how A Course in Miracles came into your life? Love to hear that story.
Yes, of course. So how it came into my life. Well, it has been now about 20 years, almost 20 years since I have become a student of the course. I first heard about it in 2001, and I was just about 26, almost 27 years old at the time. And I should preface it by saying that I've always been a person who has had spiritual leanings. So even since I was a kid, you know, I remember growing up and having these really deep thoughts and deep questions about who am I and what is this about? And am I really here? You know, even as young as five. So I've always been interested in spirituality. I have always had an interest in different religions. I've loved going to church just to listen to people and learn. So have always had that penchant to do so. And then it just, of course, evolved and changed as I got a little bit older. I had a few mystical experiences as a teenager and young adult. And then you know, I think I kept going down the spiritual path, the spiritual buffet, as a lot of people say, and trying things and learning about things. That was a big part of my formative years. But then it was just about 20, I was at 26 in 2001. And I think I just entered a new chapter in my life where I was ready to experience something different. I was only a few years out of college and working in child welfare, actually, in frontline. I was working as a counselor. And so, you know, at that time, working in child welfare can be very difficult at times. But I just remember sort of thinking, okay, where am I in my life? What am I doing? What is, and not so much like, where do I want to go? But, you know, a lot of feelings started coming up about how, you know, am I as a person? How am I dealing with stress? How am I dealing with people? How I'm thinking of people? And that meant professionally. And also I was carrying it into my personal life. So I was just, my awareness was increasing. I know that now. And, you know, it was not always an easy path. What happened was, I think I actually had a moment where I said, okay, there's got to be something better than this, than how I'm feeling, than how I'm acting. Like, I could be so professional at times at work, but then I felt like a hot mess at home or in my relationship that I had at that time. So, you know, I look back and I think now that there was definitely a moment where I said, okay, I want something different and I want to feel different. There's got to be something better. And it was right around that time, sometime within that year of me coming to that knowing, that awareness, that I came upon the course. You know, the internet in 2001 was relatively new and still young. And I remember just coming home and exploring, oh, spiritual studies, spiritual classes, spirituality. And I believe I first heard it actually from James Twyman, who is a course teacher and musician, still around and does a lot with the foundation. But that's who I first heard it from. So it took me actually a few years from 2001, even though that's how I came to know it. It's sort of like entering a pool and just going into the shallow end and just creeping to the deeper end. I was immediately drawn to the course. I heard some things that I thought, oh, what is this about? This is beautiful. I felt energetically drawn to it and tuned. It was actually a couple of years later. I never got the book, but every time I heard A Course in Miracles, I'm like, oh yeah, I want to learn more about that. And then about 2 years later, I actually got A Course in Miracles as a gift from someone unexpectedly, who said, oh, I was at a Unity church and I was given this and something tells me I need to give it to you. So that was 2003. And I remember, I was like, oh my gosh, I have heard of this book. Thank you so much, you know, to my friend. And when I opened it up, I was like, I don't understand anything in this book, right? Like, it just didn't make sense to me at all at the time. But I knew I was still drawn to it. But still, in 2003, I closed it and put it on my bookshelf and did not even really think about it for a couple of more years. It was really at a time it came back to me through conversations and another colleague. I learned more about it through starting to listen to supplements about the course from course teachers. Gary Renard was a great teacher, a huge influence to me at the time. I think his first book, like it has for so many, really helped me open up and understand it a little bit more, enough to where I'm like, oh yeah, I think I want to dig into this. And actually, it was in 2005 I really started reading it and becoming more of a diligent student of the course at that time. Yeah. So that of course is a process in itself, as we all know, but it was 2005 and just kept digging into it. And, you know, for a while, I thought I was a pretty good student until you realize there are other things that come up that even bring you deeper. So yeah. So 2005 was really my golden year there with the course.
And how do you feel like your life has changed as, you know, your understanding of the course has settled in and you've evolved over time?
How my life has changed. Well, I will tell you this. When I look back now, where I am almost 20 years later, and I look at that personality and who I was, what I was experiencing at the time, wow, I'm much more peaceful. In some ways, I feel like I am a totally different person, maybe even like twice over. You know, I feel like I've lived maybe a couple of different lives in the course of 20 years, maybe even more than that, but certainly much more peaceful and a much better understanding. And certainly now of the practice, the thought system. And it's so much so that it really is becoming so integral in my life. It's something I am carrying all the time, every day. I'm practicing every day. And my awareness is growing. So this is how it's changed. I've definitely become much more peaceful. When I was, I realize now, you know, being here at the threshold of 50, when the course, of course, you know, everything happens at the time it's meant to happen here in this story, right? But at the time, it was just, you know, before 30 years old when I first heard about it. But I came to a point around 30 where I was experiencing a lot of anger and a lot of things were coming to the surface. My anger that was coming up was being projected largely on my father. I mean, it wasn't the only thing, but I realized I was holding things in. And so this was at 30. And I somehow intuitively knew that this was going to help me. This A Course in Miracles was going to help me. And I started reading it. I started doing the lessons and I started applying it. And boy, did I think I knew a lot the first 4 years. I think a lot of us do. I think that first 4 years was really getting my feet wet, and it was helping me just dive deeper. It was really an introductory period for what was to come in my life. But it was a really beautiful time too, because I, even in those first few years, I realize now that it was much more intellectual understanding, but I did do some work that was able to take me to another level about 4 years later. So, yeah. So, more peaceful for sure. I look at everything much differently than I have ever, than I did, you know, 20 years ago.
And I would like to add in there that I can attest to Selena's level of practice and peace as she works with me on a daily workday basis. And I can make anyone have to choose peace instead of this in many ways. So she came in as a volunteer and helping with our webinars. And then she became a full-time employee because she was quite so extraordinary and we realized how much we needed her in many of the areas of communication in the foundation. So I've watched her put into practice in a daily way the course and have really been impressed by it.
Thank you, Tam.
Yeah. I don't usually get to attest to anyone's story. We really not quite true, because I work or I live with you or whatever.
But it is true. And, you know, yeah, for those who don't know me, I started with the foundation. I was a volunteer in 2020. So I've been connected. I've known Tam since then. And I've been connected to the foundation in a more direct way since 2020, mostly on the webinar team. But I'm now working full time. So, yes, that's been a journey in itself.
Well, Selena, I'd love to hear your forgiveness story.
Sure. So my forgiveness story that I chose today, when I was asked about this, doing a podcast, I thought, you know, what is the most, where I felt like I learned the most? And it was probably a slow burn forgiveness. It was a slow burn forgiveness opportunity that I had about 15 years ago. And so again, I had been, this is about 2009, just about exactly 15 years ago when this unfolded. So there's been quite a bit of time that has been since this experience, but I had been studying the course for about 4 years. And as I've already have mentioned, I thought I knew a lot. I was living in North Central Florida. I was married, had a beautiful home. And I was actually not working at child welfare at the time. I was still a nonprofit, but I was working for hospice at the time, and doing some bereavement services as well as volunteer coordination. So, you know, I thought I had a pretty good life, and I thought I was really on a good path of learning. I was pretty diligent student, especially going 4 years in. I had attended some course discussion at a local Unity church and reading books and hearing authors. And I thought I knew my stuff. And I was deepening in some intellectual understanding. But then in early 2009, my whole world exploded in the way that my marriage unexpectedly came to an end. And so this was a person that I had a relationship for a really long time. We were together for probably about 12 years, 12 and a half, going on 13 that year. But let's see, I was 34 at the time that this happened, and I had known him for 20 years. So we were great friends. So that was, 20 years of a relationship. So I'm telling you all this to know, like, lots of people, they break up and they have divorce, but this was a very long-term relationship. And it was someone I considered my best friend. It was someone I really trusted. And it was, important to mention that because when all of this happened so unexpectedly, I was completely shocked. And I was very much, I felt like the rug was just taken from underneath me. And it happened very quickly too. So I had a very good relationship with my now ex-husband, at least I thought so. And we did everything that people do in relationships. And, you know, we were both growing, we were both working. We had our own sets of hobbies, but also did things together, you know, and so on and so forth. But there was a disconnect that was starting to occur. Hindsight's 2020. When I look back, I'm like, oh, I can start to see this and this now and some things that were happening. But it really came to a head early 2009 when I discovered that he had started a relationship with somebody else and had an affair. And it was such a shock because he was my best friend, someone I trusted, and someone I never thought would do this to me. You know, there's something I remember always saying to my friends. I said, if there's anything I know about this person is he is so faithful. Like he is so dedicated. You know, that was one of his glowing traits. That's how I perceived it anyway. And felt very safe with this person. So telling you all this because it was really quite a shock when it happened. And so at that time in 2009, when it happened, you know, immediately, you know, I had studied the stages of grief in school. And also at the time I had worked in hospice. So all of these, you know, you are in shock. Like, you couldn't believe it. And you go through this stage of anger. And of course, I immediately, when I figured it out, immediately went right to him and confronted him about it. And here I am, you know, 4 years into the course, but oh boy, was I so surprised, angry, overwhelmed, you name it. And that is really when the rubber hit the road for me. When it came to my experience and my practice and the opportunities that opened up after this, were really quite amazing. So I fast forward a little bit. Obviously, he's my ex-husband now. But in the process of this, not only did, you know, our relationship break up, but this person asked me to leave. This is a house that we had built or we had bought together, and I had decorated so beautifully. You know, he asked me to leave. And that meant not only leaving my home, my community, my marriage, but also, you know, I really liked my job at the time. It was really leaving all of these different aspects. You know, this didn't hit me fully until a few weeks later. But within a very short amount of time, not only did my relationship end and this person I trusted completely betray me, but I had lost my home, my community, everything, you know, that we were building up together. It was a lot. It was a lot. And not only those things, you know, that's really just a small part of it. But what really hit me emotionally is that someone that I was so close to could betray me. And that was the slow burn. It was that feeling of being betrayed by someone you trusted. And also, as a result, because of the different dynamics and some things that happened, there was no ever closure or coming back. There was nothing to, no acknowledgement. So there was, from my perception, my experience was that I was discarded. You know, it was like, he left the house, please leave, you've got a few weeks, I'll get an attorney. There was no ever discussion. Like, he had just, boom, went ahead and moved on. And not only was I asking to change all of these different parts of my life, and, you know, I couldn't wrap my head around what was happening, but it was also just knowing that I was betrayed by someone I loved deeply. And and this was a really huge part of my identity and who I thought I was. So that opened up a lot of experiences for me. And that was the hardest thing to come to terms with. So another aspect of it is there has never been any connection since then, since the breakup. Pretty much everything was done. I think I saw him once for a meeting for, you know, during the process of the divorce, but there was never any ever coming back, any acknowledgement, you know, any, hey, let's talk about this. It was simply, I felt that I was discarded. So this was a big blow. And this is why I am telling you all of these little details in the most succinct way that I can, because it really was my slow burn. It really was where, like, oh my gosh, this is happening. I am so angry. I can't believe it. How could this be happening to me? I am such a good person. You know, like, how, I mean, I have done everything right. You know, the things that your mind tells you during these times, and yet it's happening to me. But I will tell you this, this is where I was being cracked open and where the process for me deepened, because even though this happened and I had to walk through it, and it wasn't done and just, you know, it took a while to walk through this, but I had been studying the course for 4 years, and I understood it enough to know that it was helpful, and I knew to ask the Holy Spirit for help. I didn't know how I was going to get through it. You know, I had like no money. I didn't know where to go. You know, luckily my parents were still alive, and, you know, they had a home. So I had other friends and family connections, thankfully. But you know, this was a time when it happened, I knew enough in my practice to say, help me see this differently. And I remember falling to the ground on my knees and saying, I need help to really do this. You know, I'm getting emotional because this is the part that, for me, where I knew I was entering something real, more real than what I had experienced, and I was going deeper. And I knew that I could, you know, I didn't know what anything was for, and I knew that I couldn't do it by myself. So You go from a place in life where everything is stable and you think your life is just going along the way you think, and you have goals and you have plans, and very quickly things can change, and as it has done for so many people. So that is where it changed for me. This caused me, like I said, the rubber to meet the road. I had to work at this every day. I had to work at this every day to deal with what was coming up. This was certainly a storm I was going through, but I really had to apply myself. I really had to get quiet, and I really had to do this practice as I was learning it, because I knew it was really my only way to get free. And a lot of feelings come up. This is so unfair. That is awful. You know, how could they do that? You know, all of these little things, right? Your ego is not at all happy with it. But, you know, I also know that the Course has taught us that you cannot enter into real relationships with any of God's sons unless you love them all and equally. It actually says that in chapter 13. I had read that and I'm like, okay, I'm having a hard time loving this, what happened to me, loving these people equally, you know, and like, there's all of these sort of residual things that happened too. Like, not only did this person not talk to me, his family, like, these are people I had relationships for 20 years. Everyone acted like nothing ever happened. So it was this period of, it was totally like, there was no acknowledgement at all. And I went through a period of the unknown, like, okay. I don't know who I am. I have no job. I'm 34 years old. What am I doing? Who am I? You know, it's, you know, you're just like, okay, well, I've got to do, you start, the mind goes, oh, okay, well, you've just got to do this. You've got to go get a job, you got to do this. But you're thrown into such a period, a place where you just don't know what's up and down, what's right and wrong, and who you are. I remember like having friends and they said, okay, let's go out. Let's go. I want you to come to this party. And when we, and the thought of that was like, eek, you know, there's no way I can talk to people. Like, what in the heck am I going to say to people, you know, when you're starting to talk fresh and anew and starting something new, I meant to say. But really, this big practice in my life taught me, it was obviously healing, okay? And not only to use this experience, this relationship, it was about the process of seeing this person as the Christ, this remembering that they're not even a person, right? This is what the Course, it teaches us. We don't know what anything is for, and we are not even these separate identities we think we are. But it was remembering my brother as the Christ. And that's what I worked on every day. And it was also remembering that I am not really who I thought I was, and I'm not even really here myself. So the whole example of, you know, having, really, the Course teaches us it's essentially a delusion who we think we are in our identity. I'm this person. I live here. This is my name. This is, you know, these are my relationships. This is who we think we are and what we're experiencing here in the world. But when that was taken away from me, I was forced to look at it differently. So that was the process of healing for me. That was what came out of quite a few years of practice on this. And yes, you know, here I am, happy to say 15 years later, that I have obviously, you know, now you know I work for Foundation for Inner Peace. Like, a lot of things have happened and changed, and I have done just beautifully here in this dream, but I've always done it with guidance from the Holy Spirit, who's led me through that. So when these times happen, there is a lot of opportunity to continue to ask for guidance and to remember on how you are looking at the dream. How are you looking at the experiences you're going through? Tremendous practice for awareness. And, you know, really, as you deepen in this practice, you become more vigilant at it. Awareness gets easier and your awareness continues to grow. So when things come up, they could be very small, but I can immediately identify it and say, okay, this is my projection. This is something that I'm experiencing. It is projection, how I'm going to look at it. What am I going to remember? And what does that mean to remember and to forgive? It really means to shift to the space of non-judgment, non-judgmental awareness, the right mind. And that's a practice in itself. So that's where I am. That was my huge slow burn that took me a few years to get through. So now it's been 15, you know, I think I've read research that says, oh, when you have a bad breakup, it takes about half the time of the relationship to get over. And there might be some truth to that, actually. But I will tell you that I think with the practice of forgiveness, the type of forgiveness that A Course in Miracles teaches us, I went through it more swiftly. I think that I got over a lot of the burn probably within a year and a half to 2 years. I'm not saying I forgave it all in 2 years, but I was at a much different place I was at a much different place within about a year and a half to 2 years from that. So I'm just telling you, the practices, I believe, help save time. And we hear that as course students. And from my experience, I want to say that it is true. Because had I not found this, I was feeling so much anger in my 30s. You know, it's easy to sit in bitterness. It's easy for the ego mind to ruminate, and it wants to go back to those feelings of limitation and separation. So that is really it. That is it.
Thank you, Selena.
Thank you, Selena.
Yeah. Really, I always jump in with some, like, I call it People Magazine questions, for the narrative to understand different aspects. And sure. I just, in curiosity, how did he have the right to just kick you out of the house and everything else? Like, or were you just shocked so you accepted it?
I think it was probably more of the latter, Tam, you know, like, you know, I, in my pride, was like, and probably still am like this a bit, like, no, if somebody doesn't want me around, no, thank you. I don't have to be around. Right. He asked me to leave. And at the time, you know, he was making a lot more money than I was. You know, he could take care of expenses. You know, it was, you know, he had already set his, you know, what his plan was, and he wanted me to go. And so I was like, someone asked me to go, I'll go. Mm. Yeah. I didn't fight. I didn't bow down, but, you know, I asked, remember, I was going through this period where I was like, okay, guide me in every single thing. I was quiet for a really long time during this, but I was asking too, and really connecting and really attuning to feelings and hearing things that I had not heard before. I felt much more connected to the voice, and I was hearing things more clearly. And I was starting to, my body and my mind was attuning to, oh, this feels off. This feels right. This feels, you know, this is what's happening. There were all, you know, we only have an hour here, so I know that there is like so much we could talk about, but there were so many things that happened. I was having some really amazing imagery happening and dreams and really some really vivid images and some clarity that was coming to me in this process that I had not ever experienced up until this point. And I had to trust that. And one of my messages was, okay, it's okay to go. It is okay to go.
I mean, which is extraordinary, but also understandable in those terms. And in that, I'm assuming he was not a course student, or was he interested in spirituality at all?
And no, he was not a course student. So not too interested in spirituality. Were there spiritual themes to his thought, his personal thought system? Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know if I could ever be with anyone who, you know, didn't believe. He believed in something, but no, not a practicing student. Yeah.
Right. You know, it's a funny thing, and I'm hesitant to mention this, but I have seen when people get deeper into the practice of the course or any spiritual path, where they start to fall in love with that within, and that's going on, that their partner feels as rejected as if a woman just had a baby and they're the partner. and there is, without the awareness of what a spiritual path and where it can bring you down between two partners, can be a wedge to have the other person feel left out, but they can't articulate it. And so they just want to pop another person who doesn't quite have that same interest into the picture that they've made into a perfect picture.
Yeah.
I know, like, for instance, my partner who I'm with, Peter, his spouse, he would describe as they traveled the world beautifully together. And then he wanted to travel internally and she wasn't interested. And she felt completely abandoned when he chose something else, because she never in her life expected that he would do that. And there was a lot of rage and stuff that came out of that. But if it's not talked about or articulated in any way, I have just seen many instances like that where they don't even notice that that's what it's about. And so, you know, I always caution, there's always caution of, look what this does to your relationship. Now, there's also so many other stories where people are in a relationship, not with someone, you know, who's interested in the course or even a spiritual practice, but the sight in it, because they have a different commitment to each other in a certain way, is that the person practicing the course sees the person who they're with very much as the Christ in their practice. So it works, or they don't. And they move on to someone who is more dedicated to spirituality. There's so many different variations in relationships as we move deeper inside and where that deeper commitment is. And, you know I just keep throwing my relationship onto Holy Spirit. Let this be a holy relationship, you know, and keep doing that, because the world of form changes in so many ways and so many things. Like, a child can die and separate two people. And yet, if they're actually doing the practice, it's a different movement through that suffering together.
Yes.
Or it can be. So I just wanted to add that in thinking, oh, how, you know, the typical judgment, and I love you, my typical ego judgment would be, you know, how dare he do that?
Exactly. Everybody's was that way. Including mine for a while.
and yet we know nothing, as you say, and we don't know how he could have been deeply threatened by your evolving attachment to this other path. And it, you know, even if you were showing him all the love in the world, there was still a threat that you weren't necessarily into the same in love, because you were awakening to some principles that the course was teaching. And we don't know.
You don't know, but that's beautiful. And I think what you say there is really right on, Tam. And honestly, I think that applies to my situation too. I've gotten messages, and yeah, I've gotten that type of message for sure. Yeah.
And it's extraordinary that you have had zero contact with him.
Yeah. And I think that is what is something that I want people to know. What I would like to share from this story, because it's certainly been a lesson for me, because I'm the kind of person, I was a counselor, I'm the kind of person that likes to talk things out and likes to acknowledge and work things through and problem solve. You know, I have that very much a part of my personality here, but I didn't have that experience with the person that meant the most to me.
Oh, yeah, can be so crazy making. I mean, I can just feel it inside. Wait, you're not going to talk to me.
Exactly. But the beautiful thing that I feel that I was learning is I could do this practice and not have to have him come back and tell me anything. Like, I could truly forgive.
Yeah. And have you had that completion moment of forgiveness, or is it still, does it linger at all? Yeah.
You know what? It's a really good question. I'm not sure I can fully answer that. First of all, my first thought is to say, I believe so. And I've sort of gauged it over the years. Certainly maybe not for the first four or five. And then I thought, I think I'm kind of done. And then my former father-in-law reached out to me like on one of those messenger social media programs just to say, hey, just want to let you know, like, basically I would love to, or I don't know, just connect, or he told me something and I'd like to talk to you, but didn't acknowledge it, you know? And I immediately felt like the burn come up, you know? This was several years ago, but I was like, oh, I'm not ready to talk to him. And they never talked to me. And then I went, oh yeah, I see. I got a little more work to do. And so that was quite a while ago. And believe it or not, then he reached out to me again. This is 2024, about 2 years ago, I want to say, and said, I would really like to talk to you, the father-in-law. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, sure. And I felt good about it. I felt I was supposed to. I asked.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt, yeah, it's okay to do it. And we had a nice conversation for an hour. Now, was there ever any acknowledgement of whatever happened? Not one.
It never happened.
No, there was never any acknowledgement. Wasn't it interesting that this individual wanted to reach out to me just to catch up? Hey, this is what's happening in my life. He spoke most of the time, like an hour conversation, like 55 minutes he spoke. But, you know, it was so I never got acknowledgement there. But when he asked me, I felt at peace. So there, that is another barometer. That's another gauge where I'm like, oh, yeah, I've made it. Now, my ego personality mind, when I think of the story, my personality mind, my ego says, you know, I don't like what happened to me. I don't want it to happen again. But, you know, I do feel at peace. At least this is what I believe now. Like, I think of him in love. And when things come up and I'm able to talk about him and, oh, I had this really amazing experience with, you know, in my first marriage and, oh, we did really amazing things and traveled here and there or whatever, you know. But so the way I'm able to reflect back on the experience is often with love. I may not like what happened to me, so maybe there is some more work there. You know, at some point I know in doing this, we let everything go. We let all the stories go. We even let the course go, because when we're done, we go into God. That is the ultimate. Mm-hmm. So I may, you know, there might be a time when I even that story go, and I don't even care about it at all. Yeah. I do believe in that. Yeah. I do believe that.
Or that there's true gratitude for where it brought you now. I mean, I would love, if you don't mind just for a second, to share where you found that trust in who you are with right now.
Oh, yeah. So who I'm with right now is my partner, Joe. We've been together for 5.5 going on 6 years. So it was a good 9-year span I had before I met Joe after my marriage ended. And your question is, how did I find that trust? It is a process. First of all, when I met him, which could be a whole other podcast in itself, but when I met him, there was this internal feeling. I really knew that I was to meet this person. Like, I knew that I could connect and have conversations with this person. It was like a propulsion feeling, that coming from my heart chakra. Like, I knew that I was to talk to him. And so in that, in connecting and then going through the phases of a relationship, there were certainly things that have come up that I'm like, oh, maybe I'm healing with this, you know, early on, not so much in the last year or two, maybe 3 years even, but early, oh, am I allowed to trust again? How about if this person does the same thing? Like, because in a lot of ways, this relationship I'm in now feels much deeper to me. Like, you know, Joe, for those who don't, he is also a spiritual student. And before he started studying the course, he was studying non-dualism from other teachers. And so, you know, there are more things that we're able to connect on and talk about in a way that I was never able to talk to in other relationships or with most people I've met in my life. So yeah, it's a different quality of relationship. And when things come up, I still do the same practice. Oh, I'm feeling this feeling of being fearful is coming up again. You know, like, how about if this relationship ends? You know, okay, so what do I need to do with that? Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You get to the point where you are watching the movie. You're watching the movie. You realize you're watching the movie. And you allow it, but then you shift into a place of non-judgment. I'm allowing these feelings to come up. You know, if there's something I'm supposed to do or say now, let me do it. But there is an allowance there. But there's also a realization when you go to this place in your mind that you're watching it, and you're not acting on it. There's nothing to do, but it's a state of vigilance when fear comes up. So yeah, it's still been a practice. I think all relationships are. It's one of the best ways that we grow, mm-hmm. being in a relationship. Yeah.
Matt, I'm pulling you in.
Okay.
Sorry.
So, Selena, of course, I focused on that little bit of the story too, where it's like this not recognizing or talking about it, like this disenfranchised grief where you don't have the ability to, like, there's no closure. Like, there's this wound and like, what, like, we're not going to sew this up or like put Neosporin on it or even say there's a wound. Like, what are we doing? And it's like, nope, not happening.
Nope.
Yeah. And it's like, what wound? And it's like, wow, that's, I'm glad you talked about that, because there's a lot of people in that. It's like, ideally, everybody thinks they want that, but maybe it's not right. I also thought about the part in A Course in Miracles called the healed relationship, where this relationship, there's a special relationship and one or both of the parties change the purpose of the relationship. And it goes into this, it's quote, disjunctive mode. And it's actually just perfectly overlaid with what you were talking about there, because, you know, the special relationship says, I need this aspect of you. You're my missing puzzle piece, and I need it right here. And as long as you don't change that piece and expectations don't change, then we could probably be okay most of the time. But once the puzzle piece changes and now it's round instead of square, it's not working, I'm not feeling an enhanced sense of self, that disjunctive happens. And it perfectly overlaid with that. You know, you talked about the awareness and being in the awareness, watching the movie, you know, called Selena's Life. And here comes pain. A pain comes up and I can either say, you're the pain of my separation is because of you. It's because of you, ex-husband. But you kind of took the other approach and, you know, say, I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to look at this. Did you finally get to the point, or do you feel like you can say now that what my ex did has not occurred, or does it still boomerang back? And it's like, yeah, this is real. Like, where do you feel like it's settled? I know you talked about it a little bit, but
yeah. No, you bring up so many good things, especially about the special relationship and our expectations. And believe me, that was really hammered into, I really came face to face with those notions during those first few years. It was like walking through fire to feel, I just remember walking in the woods and to feel this pain come up and being like, oh, you know, this is my life. These are my expectations. How dare you do this? But again, when I remember, you know, I know as a course student, you know, we are here experiencing this particular level. It's not real, but we're here experiencing this. And what it symbolizes is the separation that we believe in. We believe we're separated from God. And then even on a deeper level, it's out of our awareness. There is a tremendous amount of guilt that comes up because of this hidden secret belief of being separate from God. So I know that from my course practice. I am able to, and I came to the place where I was able to look at it and say, okay, I realize that this is because I fully believe that I'm separated from God. I believe that there's a separation that's occurred, but I know it didn't happen. It's not even here. It's not even real. Nothing happened. And this is just a symbol of the belief in separation and guilt that has come and is playing out in this story. So yeah, it's taken some time. I got to a point, like I am able to look at that and I still am able to look at that and say, oh no, this is from me. This is my projection. This is me. And I say that, you know, just to be relatable, it's not really even me. It's what's coming up, right? Because I'm not even a person, but I can take responsibility here on this experience of the dream saying, this is my projection. It's what's coming up here. And of course, you know, the course talks on a couple of different levels, but there's only one of us, the one Son of God. And it's a one Son of God has that deep belief of being separated. And it never really even happened. So yeah, I would say I'm there. I think I am there like most of the way for this story in my life. Absolutely. I learned a lot. You take a look back too. There's a lot of gratitude because, you know, there's a gift here with this relationship, this karma, if you will, of we're not souls. That's a separation concept, but I'll use the phrase like, it's like two souls doing a cosmic dance. And what a gift I was able to receive in this experience of the story to show me my deep beliefs. Oh. Yeah. So yeah. And like I was telling Tam, there's a part of my personality now that says, I don't like I don't like that happened. When I think back at that story, I don't want that for me again. I don't want that for anybody. But so maybe that's what is left from there, if there's any residual stuff left. But is there a feeling of condemnation? It's a preference. Is there a feeling of condemnation? No, there's not. Largely not. So we'll see. Maybe here in another year or two, I will have a new understanding of it that's still yet to come. But that's where I believe I am now. Yeah.
Well, when you get into a big ego storm, Selena, what do you do practically to get back on track? How do you cool off, get back into a God-centered mode instead of an ego-centered mode?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And you know, I love that phrase, ego storm. During this process, the story I shared with you, I explained earlier that I was receiving a lot of very vivid imagery, sometimes in dreams when I was sleeping, sometimes when I was awake. And I remember at one point I saw myself in the middle of a storm out in sea. it was like from the perspective that I was there and I couldn't see land anywhere. Okay. I was in this vast unknown. It's night out. It's storming heavily. And these huge waves are crashing over me. And the waves represented that pain of that we often experience when we are walking through the fire. But at the same time, I saw myself in this image where I was completely still. And the awareness came that I was anchored to something. I'll use the word anchor. I'm not even sure if that's right, but I was completely still. And even though I was watching it, the storm, the pain would come, the waves would crash over my head. And I was just anchored to something that was symbolic of reality, much more real, truth, oneness, watching this storm. Now, that image has helped me many times when I remember, like, oh, this is really painful. I am not liking what's happening, whether it was this story or the, you know, multitude of others that have happened in the last 15 years. But I remember that you shift to this place where I say, you know, I'm choosing to go to a place of non-judgmental awareness. I'm going to watch this. I'm going to allow these feelings, but I'm going to watch it. And what you realize, you know, we are very afraid of pain. We are. And we are really afraid. Like, what does the course say, Holmes? Okay, like later in the course, you know, it says, there is no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this. I do not know the thing I am, and therefore do not know what I am doing, where I am, or how to look upon the world or on myself. This phrase completely is a perfect summary of that experience, that initial experience that I was going through. And I think it's often the perfect summary of an ego storm, because we're really in an ego storm because we are afraid. There's no statement that is more in this world that is more afraid to hear than this. I do not know this thing that I am. But you get to this point in your mind when you're vigilant and you shift in your mind of this non-judgmental awareness, you actually just realize you're watching it. You're allowing things to happen. There's not anything to be afraid of. You might be thinking you're feeling something, but you're actually watching it. And the more you can go there, and that has been my practice, that's what I do in the storms. And I often have that imagery of being in a storm at sea, but knowing I'm really truly just completely still watching the waves crash over my head and not being harmed at all.
That's beautiful. Well said.
Thank you.
And now it's come to the point where we must know your comfort food, Selena.
We must. We must.
What a shift in direction here.
Yes. Okay.
So it's good to end on light. So it is funny. Comfort food. First of all, we could do a whole podcast on comfort food. I will tell you that. But I am a Midwesterner here in the United States through and through, born in Chicago, raised in the Midwest, lived there until I was 26. So the reason I bring that up is because I think the Midwest is like the capital of comfort food in this country. Yes. Maybe you'll agree with me, Matt.
Yeah, it's the winters, I think, is why, maybe.
And so when I was thinking, oh, what is my comfort food? You know, the easy answer, and Tam will know this because we share a love for chocolate, is I want to say chocolate. But if I'm to go a little bit deeper, I'm like, okay, I grew up, I've had so many delicious comfort foods. There's a few I can name. But if a few years ago, I moved back to Michigan for a couple of years. And I grew up in the Midwest, but I grew up like born in Chicago, raised in Indiana, and not as familiar with Michiganders, but I became to be. And I tasted some of the most delicious comfort food I think I have ever had. There is something in southeastern Michigan called the bumpy cake. I don't know if anyone else knows this except Michiganders, but it is essentially like a chocolate devil's food cake. It has like a buttercream frosting they put on top of it, and it makes these little bumps. I think that's why they call it a bumpy cake. And then they cover it in this chocolate ganache. And I never have tried anything quite like that. So that is one of them. I will share with you.
That's a good one.
Cake. Have you guys heard of it?
The bumpkin cake?
Bumpy cake.
Yeah, it started from, I had to like look it up because I'm like, how come there are so many good things up here that I've not heard of before? But there's a certain confectioner, I think, in southeastern Michigan that made it a really long time ago. They invented it, but it's very popular, the bumpy cake. You can go somewhere, talk to a local, I want a bumpy cake, and they'll tell you where to get the best bumpy cake. So that was really good.
Oh my gosh, that sounds good.
It's delicious. And, you know, I always thought, oh, Chicago deep dish pizza. Sorry, Matt, I have to tell you this. It's the best. And then I went and I did Detroit style pizza. I got to tell you, I like it better. It's my favorite. So those two things I'll share, Detroit style pizza and bumpy cakes.
Good. What is Detroit style pizza? Is it thick crust, thin crust?
It is a thick crust. It's square. I don't know how else to explain it. Maybe if you explore online, you'll see pictures of square pizzas. But I don't know if I've had pizza that good before, except, well, there are some pizzas in New York I've liked. But yeah, it's very good. It's very good. It's a good go-to. Detroit-style pizza.
Oh, I'm a thin crust pizza person, grew up in New York with that. But
yes.
I can open up.
Yeah, I've never heard of Detroit style pizza. I'm learning things here.
That's me too. Like I said, I was such a proud Midwesterner, and I'm like, there are things that I feel like I'm just learning the first time here in my 40s. But that's it. And another one too. They have this ice cream called Blue Moon ice cream.
Now I have heard of that. I think.
Yes. Okay. It's like also popular in Wisconsin and some areas. But
you have to hold back for when we ask you to another podcast.
I know we gotta go. So, yep, that's
well. You're right, because Tam's like, Matt will listen to as many comfort foods as she has. Exactly.
Well, okay. You've opened up a vault here. Like they just keep pouring out. But no,
Tam's like, I'm listening to two Midwesterners talk about comfort foods.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, Selena. Great. Thank you so much for coming on Miracle Voices and sharing your miracle voice. We really appreciate it. Good luck with the rest of the year out there in Nevada. And thanks for turning us on to these comfort foods. You had such a delightful forgiveness story. We really, really appreciate it. I'm sure a lot of people will find comfort in hearing it.
Absolutely. Thank you both so much. And Happy New Year to you. And Happy New Year to everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening today. Please subscribe to Miracle Voices by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you are enjoying these conversations, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. And lastly, please visit us at miraclevoices.org and join our newsletter so we can stay connected. Until the next podcast, I want to leave you with my favorite course quote, "When you want only love, you will see nothing else."